Hello and welcome back to Millennial 2020, and I'm now here with the penultimate episode of tonight, the third night, and this is with Eke Lux, who's also known as Lace and Thorns on DLive, and that I'll link that in the description for in the live chat, so that people can subscribe to him on there. That's where he's more active nowadays, and but he did start off on YouTube as Eke Lux. Now, hold on a second. What's happening here? There. Okay, so here we go. That's him. And I will link this on my Telegram. Here we go. All right, so welcome, Eke. It's funny saying that because in Britain, Eke used to be an abbreviation for an ecstasy tablet back in the early 90s. So that's it's funny. A strange thing to say, but I'm sure that's not what I mean. Do you want to explain what the name is? You just explained it to me privately, yeah. But I think just for the sake of it, why don't you explain it to the audience?
It's one of those dumb college jokes. I went through a little Nietzsche phase when I was younger, and his book, Eke Homo, Behold the Man. And when I first started on YouTube, I had previously gone to like a really big William Cooper. I don't know if anyone remembers William Cooper, but he was big into like occultism and whatnot. And he introduced me to the concept of Luciferianism. So I decided as a joke to myself that I was going to name my channel Eke Lux as a reference to both Bill Cooper and Friedrich Nietzsche. It's a really pretentious joke, but there it is.
All right, so great. It's quite esoteric, but there we go. It is clever. All right, so what you want to talk about, and this is sort of riffing on, and I felt bad because you actually asked a question, this question in one of the streams last night, and I had to ignore it because it wasn't relevant to the Black Pill stream, but it's riffing on something that was said in the Tyler Hamilton stream, which is about the need for narratives in society. So would you like to introduce that topic?
Yeah, it's kind of a weird topic, but I think it's really important. And I have noticed it across multiple streams from this millennial. And the core of it essentially is that we really do seem to have lost our way, and that's not good. And, you know, people talk about the nihilism and the hedonism and all this good stuff. And that's basically, that's a non-narrative. That's the opposite of, and when I say narrative, I guess it's important to explain that. What I mean by narrative is we need to have a story that we tell to ourselves about how we interact with the world, who we are in relation to the world, and who we are in relation to other people and society, and how we interact with those elements meaningfully. That's what I mean by a narrative. And for the most part, the closest we've got to a narrative right now is basically consume product and get excited for new product. That's the closest we've got to a narrative. That's not satisfying. You end up with like social media dopamine hits as being the only thing that you look forward to throughout the day or whatever it is that people do. I have no idea. That's not meaningful in the least. And you can't build a civilization off of that. You can't have life direction with that. Like, what are you going to, what kind of future plans?
Yeah. Have you seen the film? I did a review of it with Frody Midyard a few weeks ago called It's That Feeling When No GF, TFW, No GF. And, oh, God, it's a grueling watch. But basically, you see, it's a bunch of young guys scattered across America, like Texas, Washington, New York. And you basically, the problem is, apart from the fact that there are no career prospects for them, no jobs, the big problem is that there's no narrative for them. Yeah. For these are young men who need, and you know, this is a sort of conflict that in every young man, the fact that he wants to carve his own path in the world. He wants to be, everyone likes the renegade, the loner, etc. And yet he also wants a narrative. He also wants to be part of something greater than himself. It's a conflict that gets resolved, ideally throughout the course of your 20s and 30s. But that's the problem for all these young guys. There is no narrative for them. There is only what we call global homo. There's the globalist consumer marketplace, which doesn't need heroism and it doesn't need innovation, really.
Innovation, but only for like new products. That's it.
Yeah, only to get more efficient at what it already does.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's the big issue. I've watched it. Oh my God, one of the most horrifying things I ever heard in my life. I heard a young woman say this back when I was like 20, 22, something like that. And she said to me, then I left high school and then I realized that I had no greater goals in life. Like that was jaw dropping when she said that. Well, I was like, oh my God, this is too real. This is too real. Because even then, and this is back in my 20s, this is when I was still rather blue-pilled, even then, on a subconscious level, I completely understood exactly the horror of that statement. It stayed with me for over 20 years now. So anyway, yeah, we absolutely need narratives. And I guess the thing that I'm thinking of right now is that it's kind of a cobbled together set of ideas from multiple people.
Before you get to that, let's talk. Actually, somebody's asking if you could increase your volume slightly.
Oh, you know what?
Is there any way for you to do that?
No, I usually crowd the mic, so that's what I'm going to do. I'm just going to crowd the mic. Sorry about that.
Okay. All right. Before we get into ideas for narratives now and in the near future, could you talk about some previous narratives that have, existed in the Western world?
Well, I mean, there's the old archetype of King Arthur. It's an easy one. And I like that one a lot. And the basic concept is you've got a warrior king whose people are in danger and he goes to save them. That's it in a nutshell. I love that one. I think it's great. And the orientation in that one is pretty clear. You've got people who are in distress. You're a do-gooder, and you are going to go and save them. It's a modified version of damsel in distress. I think it's awesome. And if you've got a good actor, one who is behaving and thinking and acting authentically, one who is not being disingenuous about it, like so many SJWs, I think they do have the same overall narrative, but I view theirs as being a negative inversion of the King Arthur narrative. I think it's a good thing. This is basically where a lot of like policemen and soldiers are and firefighters in terms of their mentality. It's that they want to go and save something. It's almost like a shepherd kind of a concept, which I think is good. I think we need that. And this, by the way, is also why it's related and I haven't addressed it yet. So I'm bringing up like a new weird element, but all of those superhero movies, those are basically like, those are the Bugman gods. And strangely enough, right now within SJW-dom or whatever you want to call it, they seem to be attacking all of their gods. It's really, really weird. So Chris Hemsworth or whoever it was, like he's now being attacked because he's a Christian or something like that. Like it's very peculiar stuff, but whatever. Anyway, the SJW mindset is still a crusader. It's just that they happen to be a crusader that is railing against what they define as being bad. What is bad? Okay. So now here's a new element. The narrative. Okay. So we were talking about the narratives that some narratives that we can think about from the past that are good. The other one that I want to mention, by the way, is the redemption narrative, and we need a redemption narrative. If I was going to say anything about a narrative that we need to start stitching together, redemption narrative, which by the way, I got from Jonathan Pohl, who may or may not be in the chat. I freaking love that guy. The concept of the redemption narrative, I'm sorry, I was backing away from the mic. The concept of the redemption narrative is that the beginning of it is that you are an okay person. Then you go to being a not okay person for one reason or another. And then you try to right yourself. That's the redemption. The redemption is going from a negative state to a positive state, from low to high. And we need that.
So it's kind of like going from neutral to tempted or damaged, damned to higher than neutral.
Yes.
At the end.
okay, I was going to make I can make this reference, I think. Anjum Chowdhury actually went through that exact narrative. Look at Anjum Chowdhury back in the early 2000s, the way that he was, and then he went through a conversion. He did his own redemption arc. In his view, I don't agree. I disagree with his overall lifestyle, but whatever. But from his standpoint, it's a redemption arc. That's exactly what it is. And we need something like that for us. Obviously without that version of extremism, but that's my own view. So yeah.
What would you say about SJW narratives, the ones that we are? I mean, obviously, and someone said it's not 2015 anymore, we shouldn't be talking about SJWs. Yeah. But yes and no, because it is interesting, just because we're sort of living through the peak of that, the apex of that stuff now.
Yeah.
So it would be interesting just to characterize it. Just for the sake of it. So what would you say about SJW narratives as we're seeing it on, you know, film and TV series now? I'm staggered by the prevalence and shamelessness of it and the shrillness of it as well. That's a huge thing for me. So what would you say about this? What would you say these narratives are?
I would say, okay, so my overall thesis right now is that we need to do, there are two elements to it. Element number one is, we need to gravitate towards narratives that are native to the European mind. And that's the whole, you know, redemption narratives, white knight narratives, so on and so forth. Things that we can recognize from our own past. And element number two is that we ought to be rejecting alien and hostile narratives. That is to say, narratives that are hostile and alien to us. And in my view, the SJW narrative is hostile and alien. It is not native to Europe. It may have been the people who originated this narrative may have been physically located in Europe. That does not make them European. They were simply physically in Europe once this narrative was developed. What is the narrative? The narrative is oppressor versus oppressed, basically. And that's really the crux of it. In a nutshell, their entire narrative is one of a victim narrative, and
where the victim is always righteous, and you know, the oppressor is always evil and unjust,
correct?
Unjustly powerful, and the oppressed is always unjustly oppressed. And I mean, obviously, oppression isn't a nice thing, but the oppressed is always someone who should have been powerful, but was somehow artificially denied his power. Or heart power.
Yeah.
Strong. Or X power.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, and you'll notice a couple of elements to that. One element is that the victim, it's undeserved harm being done to the victim. And I don't fully, like, because the narrative oppressor versus oppressed doesn't talk about any context. It doesn't talk about what may be going on in a particular situation. You simply have one person that is powerful that's always wrong, and then you have the non-powerful that's always right. That's their narrative. And I don't agree with that at all. Okay, for a lot of reasons, whatever. Undeserved punishment, I think, is ridiculous. Sorry, I lost my train of thought for some reason. The other element is, you'll notice that the two elements, oppressor versus oppressed, those are purely materialistic. Those have nothing to do with metaphysics. They have nothing to do with good, God, beauty, or anything like that. So it's always bound in material. And I think, personal opinion, the European mind does have a tendency towards transcendence, does have a tendency towards, you know, good, God, beauty, so on and so forth. So the oppressor-oppressed narrative, in my own view, is essentially incompatible with the Western mindset. So when I think of SJWs, and I don't know what they call themselves these days. So, like, I understand that that's a very old term. Believe me, I get it. And I was wondering to myself what I would call them immediately before a stream, and I couldn't think of one.
There's the term woke, but I don't like that. I'm really not comfortable. Yeah. But there's something about the term woke and wokeology and woke people. I just, it feels like a complete cop out and euphemism, and
it's all
just pointless. Yeah. Pointless. It's, I'm happy to just refer to progressives or globalists or whatever, but I don't know why we've now got this new term. It's like when they tried to replace mixed race with dual heritage. It's like, that was a flash in the pan that, about 10 years ago. But anyway, sorry. So I don't know what the term would be now, what they would call themselves.
Melanated.
not all of them. But for the sake of brevity, we'll just call them SJWs.
Yeah. You'll notice that the SJW narrative, the oppressor, oppressed, exploited, exploitor, that's basically just Marxism. That's really all it is in a nutshell. And this is why my own I'm just about to finish my copy of the Communist Manifesto. So as it turns out, all of the old boomers from like the 1950s that were bitching and moaning about commies, they were right. As it turns out, they were actually right. I mean, freaking boomers, who knew? Anyway, this is why when I refer to the alien and hostile narrative as one that may have been born in Europe, that does not make it European. I do not regard that ideological program as being native to the European mind. I just don't.
So in that case, how would you say, what is the treatment of the poor, the needy, the underdog that the European is comfortable with? I mean, that's a legitimate question. If we're going to say that lionizing the underdog is alien to us, then what about the Robin Hood myth, for example?
Yeah, I think the Robin Hood myth has been co-opted, and I think that that's on purpose, and it really bothers me, to be perfectly honest. In answer to your question, kith and kin, my own opinion is that so I live in Los Angeles, which is now essentially Upper Tijuana, and you will notice that the Mexicans, they are pretty good about dealing with family. They're pretty good about looking out for one another. So what are they thinking about? Kith and kin. That's what they're thinking about. It's my own opinion that I've heard stories about this too, where you see what are those burial mounds that are, you know, scattered about the aisles, and you'll hear stories of how there are, like, the mound is not reserved only for royalty. There are other people that are buried in the mound. And when you would hear stories about the people that would live in those houses, you would have the master of the house. They would be sitting down and breaking bread with the rest of the waitstaff. It's almost from a family standpoint. So they were, in my own view, they were looking out for their own. And just because the person happens to be like a maidservant or whatever doesn't mean that they're a lesser person or whatever. At least that's my view. I mean, perhaps I'm wrong. I'm really not sure. But the thing is that when I...
It's funny, you know. Sorry, you finish.
Oh, no, just that...
I'll go. There's a program called Upstairs, Downstairs, and I've talked about it on my channel quite a few times because I've got a huge fondness for it. And it was made in the first half of the 70s. I think there are 5 seasons of it. And it's about, it's Upstairs, Downstairs. It's about a London townhouse wealthy family. They live upstairs, and then it's well, they occupy the upstairs, and then the servants are downstairs in the cellar, the kitchen and all that. And the linchpin between these two worlds is the butler, Hudson, and he obviously is the conduit which communicates between the two of them. But you see these two families essentially. But in another sense, it's one single family because they all know each other. And I think it's very sweet. And I've actually forgotten what I was going to say about this, but it related to that. So there was a sense of concern, noblesse oblige, a sense of concern for the poor, a sense of that, yes, you are lower than me in the hierarchy, but you are my responsibility. It's not just that you're my slave, you are a robot, you're a household appliance, you are a human being, and I am responsible for you. And in return, you do things for me. So that's a nice narrative. And that was the kind of program, early 70s. My parents watched that when they were in their 20s. And then, but they assumed that it was a rose-tinted vision of that era, which was the early 1900s. They assumed that that's not really how it was, that this is a nostalgic view of it. The reality was there was great exploitation and loathing between the classes. There was a conflict model. And that was the reality. What my Marxist lecturer is telling me at university is actually the way it was. What I'm seeing in this TV show is an idealized version of it, but the actual truth is that it was nasty, and that there was the oppressor and the oppressed, basically. And so, and as the years passed from the early 70s, my parents internalized that more and more because they kept seeing that narrative reinforced in more modern TV dramas. They would see, so it was like that, in fact. So I think that's just the internalizing and the promulgation of that, what we now call the SJW narrative.
Yeah, and again, I genuinely regard that as an alien and foreign and hostile narrative. I don't think I don't see that as being a part of my people, for want of a better phrasing. Have I seen snobbishness? Of course I've seen snobbishness. Have I seen people be disrespectful? Of course, lots of people do lots of terrible things, but that doesn't mean that that is the overall treatment and thought patterns for all people. And unfortunately, when you've got a multicultural society, it gets really easy to start disregarding people. And, you know, not to go too into topical stuff, God, what was the guy? I think it was Robert Putnam or something like that. And he wrote this big treatise on how as diversity increases, civic engagement decreases. Yeah. So I'm sure everyone in the chat knows about that. But it's important and it's really highly relevant to where we are now. There was a little element about it where even like people who are within the same ethnic will end up avoiding one another in a larger multi-culti society. So it's destructive for all people, not just for us. It's destructive for the people that are brought in as well. It's generally just a bad thing. Anyway, but coming back, the thing is that when you have a roughly homogenous society of Europeans, there tends to be more, to borrow a word, camaraderie amongst the Europeans. So, yeah, like I don't view the whole oppressor oppressed thing as being something that is like a part of us. I really don't. I don't care what anyone says. I just reject it outright. That's just how I am now.
Yeah, I think that what is intrinsic to Europeans, and this came up in my stream yesterday with Paul Gottfried, I think what is intrinsic to us is a desire for fairness and justice. And so, and I think that that desire has been hoodwinked by certain narratives. I think it really does outrage and disturb and upset a European, especially women, but also men, to see something unjust happening. It sort of annoys us. We want to fix it. And so, you know, obviously that is now, whenever we see a hierarchy, we've now been trained to think, okay, well, that is unjust because it's hierarchy. There should be equality, and it's unjust that there is not equality. But I think that it's obviously insane and unworkable. There has to be hierarchy. There is no equality on Earth or in any of creation. So there has to be hierarchy. So this reaction that we've been trained to have to it is completely unnatural, I think.
Yeah, it looks like what they're going for, equality of outcome is always what they want. And they talk about like equity and empathy and fairness or whatever, and compassion. Those are the big buzzwords right now. And it's my own view that I already see these things in myself. It's really weird. Whenever I see a person acting like an a-hole, I don't know what it is, but there's something inside me that just triggers immediately. And I'm like, that needs to stop. I don't know why, but I actually do sense that peculiar white knight switch in the back of my head. So like, I get it. And I completely agree that it has been, it's
co-op.
Been steered. Yeah, exactly. Like the rudder has been taken away from us, and I don't like that. I'm not a fan of that at all. So
I guess that helps. I mean, when you said narratives, I thought that you were referring to societal narratives, like this is the narrative of the British Empire, for example. And so that's something that people can plug into and find their role within that grand narrative. Because it seems to me that societies do need narratives as well. I think that, and that's another problem here, we don't really know what our society exists for. Well, I mean, in a way you could say we do. We think it exists to spread democracy and equality around the world and prosperity. So I guess there is that narrative.
Alien narrative. A pox.
But all right, so what would you say then about looking forwards now, or from where we are?
My thinking right now is that, because one of the things that Tyler Hamilton and Josh Neal, I doubt Josh is here, but big hello to Josh. I love that guy.
He's going to be on Millennial later.
Yeah, it's super cool. I like that. He was saying something about he would like to have like a big philosophical thing that he can just roll out fully formed, you know, sprung from the brow of Zeus. And I don't think we're in that at all. I don't think that's possible. And we have to start where we are. So my thinking is that we should probably be dealing in baby steps. And as ridiculous as this might sound, Tyler Hamilton and Josh Neal and Jefferson Lee on the channel, I forgot the name of the channel, Witnats something or other, Witnats?
Thamster Witnats.
Look through all of their videos, and what will you notice? Aristotle, Plato, I'm confident they'll get to Thomas Aquinas at some point. They're going through all the classics. They're going through European thought patterns. So it's a return to classics, classicism. And that's all fine and well, and I think it's great. And I'm enjoying listening to their conversations. I think that we need to go a lot further with that. Well, not further, broader. Yeah, I guess broader would be one way of thinking about it. We need actual stories to tell each other about ourselves and how we orient to the world so that we can engage in good decision making. And for the moment, I think we have to limit ourselves to basically like on an individual level, how do you act and behave in your own life? What are the decisions that you make in your own life? I don't think we're anywhere near the point of grand narratives. I just don't. Perhaps we are. That's just not what I see right now. I hope there's a catalytic event or whatever and everything galvanizes. That'd be great, but I don't see that. So what I was thinking is, the old, make a new generation. We need to make a new generation. And once we make that new generation, we're going to need to tell those little kids stories. So what I was thinking is essentially a return to storytelling, a return to bardic thought patterns or whatever. I think that we should start re-embracing like Grimm's fairy tales, Aesop's fables, stuff like that. Things that anyone can agree on, things that anyone will be able to relate to, European minds especially, those are stories by us and about us and for us. So when I talk about narratives, I want to go big, I want to go broad, but really I think we need to recognize that we're starting from, like, I don't want to say zero, but approaching zero. What do we have now? A language, the English language, French, Italian, German, or whatever. But beyond that, Christianity has been destroyed. Paganism has been destroyed. All of, what is it, Western expansion, the manifest destiny that we had in America, that's gone. So all of our big grand narratives have all been destroyed. I think the easiest thing to do is to start small scale. And by starting small scale, I mean, think about the, you just took a sip of Coca-Cola. I bought one myself. Hold on. Okay. We need to,
familiar sign.
That's right. We need to start engaging in just storytelling that we will be able to recognize and understand and agree with, so that we can orient ourselves and just make proper decisions. One of my favorites is the wolf in sheep's clothing. The wolf in sheep's clothing is all about something that is LARPing like it's a sheep. It is not a sheep. And that wolf, if you see the wolf, then you can see the danger. Then you can identify the danger.
And this, it's a terrifying thing, isn't it? So yes. That moment when I remember being scared by that as a child, the idea of a wolf. Fellow sheep.
That's right. And there's a concept called Uncanny Valley. You've heard of that, right? I've experienced that Uncanny Valley personally. Having lived in Los Angeles, I have met a couple of wolves. They're all around me. And once you can identify the wolf, things become a lot easier. So to draw upon a fable that anyone can talk about, anyone can talk about this. This is not against terms and services. You can talk about the wolf in sheep's clothing. So when I think about alien narratives, usually I'm thinking about a wolf in sheep's clothing that is trying to offer us a foreign, hostile, and alien narrative that is not native to us.
Yeah, I think what's something that's important to say here is there are people in the live chat saying that this is sort of philosophical ruminations and so on. I think this actually isn't, because what we're talking about here is something that's a practical idea that people can do, and which will have immediate results insofar as, you know, if you are raising a kid, you can raise that kid to have these ideas, these archetypes in his head that are compatible with his nature, with his psyche, which is that's of immediate practical benefit. I mean, this is not something airy fairy and abstract. Yes. It's actually something very real. Yes. It's important to say that.
Yeah, and also, so your millennial Yule is cool because you bring together people talking about neat concepts, and it's great. And one of the things that you'll notice, that anyone will notice in the chat especially, there are neophytes everywhere. And those neophytes need to understand what's going on. They are looking for someone to help them through, to help guide them in some way. And
can you just say what you mean by neophyte? Because I've actually forgotten what that word means.
Oh, just a noob. That's all. So there are going to be people that are newly red-pilled and are genuinely confused about what's going on and actually don't know how to make sense of what's happening around them. Heaven knows that's where I was back in 2017, 2018. That's when I got red-pilled in the formal sense. And I needed people to help guide me through things. And you know what was missing the entire time? Narratives. That's what was missing the whole time. So I was trying to, I was getting information, and a lot of that information was disparate and didn't make sense. I did not have a context for the information. One example would be that, conflicting and opposing narratives. One narrative that really bothers me a lot is the one of the destruction of Amalek. And whenever I hear a person denigrate Germans, that bothers me. I bristle. And the reason for that, again, kith and kin. They're not kin, but they are kith. They are our cousins. And so it's a defensive posture on my part, or protective, I suppose. The Amalek narrative is from an alien and hostile group. And the Amalek narrative involves revenge. It's a revenge narrative. So, I forgot what I was saying. I had like three thoughts go through my head all at the same time just now. Son of a bitch. Sorry.
Well, you were saying about alien and hostile narratives that are not helpful to us.
Yeah. Well, anyway, just that we need to have. Oh yeah, that's right. Neophytes. I didn't know about the Amalek. I didn't know about that back in 2017, 2018. I didn't learn about Amalek until like early 2019 or something like that. So it took me a long time to get to that. And what we need, Melanie Yule being an example, what we need are rituals that are repeated that give consonant information that reinforces itself so that people can form a coherent view of the general situation that we find ourselves in right now. And this actually does mean repeating ourselves. Like it or not, we actually do have to repeat ourselves. So this is one of the reasons why I'm thinking about things like Grimm's Fairy Tales, Aesop's Fables, and the whole bardic thing. What do bards do? They tell stories, the same freaking story over and over and over again. Why? New people are born every day. There are new people coming into this channel every day. There are newbies around us every day. That's not a bad thing. That's a good thing. And we need to get into the mindset of repeating ourselves and not being upset about it and not being condescending about it, because those people need and deserve to be helped through this. There are lots of people in the chat right now that went through the red pill experience, and it was very traumatic and it was really upsetting. And I'm sure that everyone, well, not everyone, a lot of the people, it would have been super duper handy if they had had someone to help them through it. And that's kind of that. That's how I view, maybe not my role, maybe not your role per se, but just in general, that is a role that needs to be filled. And yours, in Millennial, does it seems to move in that direction. So I'm just using this as an example, is all, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I think that people do have roles in the movement, and you know, mine is for the last couple of years at least, it has been pretty much confined to Millennial, and that's not something I wanted to happen or chose, but it is for now at least. It is the thing, because, and partly it was just because there are many reasons which we don't need to go into, but the main one was I simply didn't know where to take my channel, so I didn't know what to make in terms of my own content, or where to take the movement. So I just took this sort of role of being a counselor and facilitator to other people in the movement. I have feelings about that as well, but I think really the lesson I've learned at the end of this is really you should take care of yourself first, because it's a kind of thankless task looking after other people, frankly.
Well, yeah.
Often they just, you've got to take care of yourself first, which is because that's kind of what everyone else does in a strange way. But yeah, that's another thing altogether. I think that Millennial functions as a way to, you see, what seems to happen every year is that by December, the movement has spent 11 months tearing itself apart with infighting and ridiculous, pointless vendettas, all the arguments that are completely pointless because we're not in a position to enact any ideas anyway. So it's all of that stuff goes on, and then Millennial arrives in December and seems to heal a lot of the damage, which is really nice, obviously. I mean, it is part of it. And that is, oddly enough, something that seems to fit into European mythology, the idea of a rebirth at the end of the year, which is nice. Mm. Again, it's not something that I intended to happen. It just seems to have emerged that way. So it's nice. And it's funny, really, that it just sort of fell together. It fell into place. But yeah, to get back onto the topic at hand, I think that this is something that it can be practically useful. What I would warn against is the danger of LARPing, because what often happens in the movement is that somebody will come up with a good idea, and the idea in itself is perfectly good, but then people say, yes, that sounds like a good idea, but what they mean is, I hope someone else does it.
Yeah,
and I've seen this so many times in the 7 years that I've been in the movement, where it's a good idea, but it never takes off because we don't have the logistical expertise or framework by which to make things happen, by which to incentivize and encourage certain behaviors. And so it falls by the wayside. I think that there are now programs that are being made home education programs, homeschooling programs, things like that, which should help with this. I think it is also something that, I mean, there's so much work that needs to be done in the movement. There's so much that I could say about this, but it would be not relevant to this chat. But I do think that, you know, I've said for years we need infrastructure, but it's not just that. There's a lot that we need.
Think that one of the big things that would help out is just do like bowling night or movie night or cards night or game night. It doesn't matter what it is, but do something and make it a ritual chain. Do what you can to have something that is a regular occurrence where you invite people that you like and you know and you trust. And it doesn't even have to be political. And it's almost better if it's, no, it's not almost, it is better if it's not political. Because God knows, people start talking about politics, so like whatever. But have something, I've seen this a lot of times. You go and you like want to meet a person, and then like you spend all of your time and effort and energy trying to meet that person and show who you are. And meanwhile, think about all the best times you've ever had with anyone in your life. You were involved in some silly bullshit like a water gun fight or whatever, like something stupid. And that's way more entertaining. And you bond over that much more than anything else. So, yeah, I think. And also, you know what? Games are a really good way of testing people. This is related. I promise you this is related. Think about how guys play with one another. They pretend like they're fighting. The first thing they start doing is they start attacking each other playfully, but they do attack each other, whether verbally or physically. They pretend like they're fighting one another. And that's actually a really good test of character. And the harder you play, the more you know you can trust that person. The moment the person flinches, and this is why people make fun of people who flinch. You know, it's nothing personal. Like, God knows I flinch too, like whatever. But the idea is that if the person takes it seriously, you know that in a real situation, they're going to be, you might not be, they're a wild card. You're not sure how they're going to react in a very real world stress situation. So that's the whole thing of play. You're figuring out what kind of a character, what kind of a person you're dealing with. So that's why even with movie night, you know, I love movies, huge fan of media, whatever. It's passive. And you're not learning very much about the person that you're physically around. As where with game night, now you can really fuck with that person. Now you can really test that person and see how they react under stress and vice versa. You can see how you react under stress. And, you know, even though I'm not a big fan of sports ball or anything like that, It's just not my bag.
You can see it's something that's very important to men in general. Most men.
Yes. Yeah. Not as a spectator sport. I have no interest in it as a spectator sport at all. But if you're actually doing it, that's a different issue entirely. If you are the one kicking the ball, now it's something. Now you're talking about something real. So that's my thoughts. And, you know, the whole thing, because you're talking about, you know, be careful not to be too LARPy. And I actually agree with that. And I think that the game night, it's related to like fairy tales, you know, telling fairy tales, only in that you are still, you're interacting with other people. And I think it's a meaningful interaction. That's all.
Yeah, I think it's this is another thing that is needed just on the sort of basic level between people in the movement, is ways to bond so that they're not just arguing. And apart from anything else, it's arguing about the same things over and over and over again. I mean, it's I think that there is frustration because we in the movement, because we don't really know how to move forwards practically. Trump seemed like a way to do that. Turned out no. Brexit seemed like a way to do that. Turned out no. And this is a continuing problem. And I think that I don't really have anything to say about it just now. I've certainly got a lot of thoughts about it, but again, I don't want to pollute your millennial with my own ideas too much.
I don't care. It's fine. I think the best thing is just start where you are. I really, because you're thinking, and I fall into the same trap myself, so I'm not saying that, you don't know what you're talking about. I totally know what I'm talking about. Nothing like that. Just that I think the only thing we can do is start where we are. As an example, I am doing what I can to build up some shoulders so that I'll be a little bit less of a flabby old man. And that means that I've got to do, you know, push-ups and, you know, walks and jogs and whatever. But I'm not starting off looking like Bruce Willis moving on towards Hulk Hogan or something. No, I'm starting off as just some guy. So I think the best thing to do is start where you are. And how does that relate to narratives? Well, it relates to narratives in that we currently are rudderless in society. You start where you are. So what we need to do is start building up stories that are native to us. And like it or not, that means going back to classics, relearning them and repeating them for other people. We need to start. I mean,
I think we need to bring new life into them as well. Yes. I mean, that's a crucial part of this. It's not just, there's the famous expression, what is it? Tradition is not preserving ashes, but keeping a flame alive. Paraphrased. I think that when people talk, when they hear talk of the classics, you know, we're going to read the classics, that can sound like a sort of morbid activity, and I don't think it should be at all. I think it should seem like an opportunity rather than a duty. It should be a duty, but I think we should also see it as an opportunity, because after all, this is something that will benefit us in the here and now.
Well, here's one way of thinking about it. For all of those people who are into novels or comic books or movies, film, television, music, pick one. You can retell all of these old stories in new forms. And think about all of Aesop's fables and Grimm's fairy tales. Those are copyright free. All those people that are like, oh, I need to write like a script, and or I got to write that book and it's going to be super rough and blah, 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 blah. Dude, you've got a template. You have a template. Use it. Retell it. Repurpose it. There's no not only is there no shame in it, if anything, it's, I want to say, a point of pride, but approaching it only in that it's like, dude, but this is our stuff. This is ours. We should embrace it. I see nothing wrong with that at all. We have stories.
I agree. This is definitely something that we should be looking into in quite a serious way in the coming years, because I think we are going to need. Well, it's ideal fuel, and we are going to need fuel. You know, that we're going to need these this stuff with which to move forwards, because this, you know, this is going to be a damn difficult century. I mean, I've known that. I've been saying that throughout all of my channel. I think that has just become a lot more obvious this year, and because there are pretty damn powerful forces ranged against us, and I think that we are going to need to consult history, consult our heritage, in order to survive this onslaught. All right, well, let's leave it at that. Are there any final things you'd like to say before we finish?
One last thing about it is that Sauron, the all-seeing eye, is really good at identifying certain things, but for whatever reason, AI has a really tough time with layered meaning, symbolism, and memes. So this is actually another reason why we ought to be going back into Aesop's Fables and Grimm's Fairy Tales, because we'll be able to speak in a language that the AI will have some difficulty with. So just throwing that out there. Anyway, yeah, I guess that's about it. Thank you very much for the chit chat, and to everyone in chat, remember to floss.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you to Eki Lux, also known as Lacen Thorns on DLive. And I will be back in about an hour for the final show tonight, which is with Philosophicat. I'll see you then. In the meantime, thank you, Eki Lux. I'll see you all later.